Good day, and thank you for joining to discuss Freckles' fourth quarter and year-end results for fiscal 2019. On the call today, we have Neil Sweeney, Freckles' CEO, and Andrew Walensky, Freckles' CFO. Please be advised that this call is being recorded. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Following the formal presentation by management, we will open the call for questions. At that time, I'll provide instructions on how to queue for questions. I'll now turn the call over to Freckles' Chief Financial Officer, Andrew Walensky.
Thank you, Operator. Good afternoon, folks. Welcome to our conference call. As the Operator mentioned, I'm Freckles' CFO. And before we begin our call, I'll just start with a safe harbor statement, and then I'll hand the call over to Neil, who will provide an overview of our fourth quarter as from a financial and also an operational perspective and provide an outlook for the business. Certain statements made on this conference call and our responses to various questions may constitute forward-looking information within the meaning of Canadian securities laws. These forward-looking statements, such as statements about growth, expected growth, revenues, or any financial outlook for upcoming fiscal periods, rely on a number of assumptions concerning future events that are believed to be reasonable, but are subject to a number of risks, uncertainties, and other factors, many of which are outside of Freckles' control. These could cause the actual results, performance, or achievements of the company to be materially different. And while we believe that the assumptions underlying any forward-looking information are reasonable, we caution that there are inherent difficulties in predicting certain important factors that could affect the future performance and results of our business. We expressly disclaim any intention or obligation to revise or publicly update any forward-looking information, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise, except as may be required by applicable securities laws. During the course of this call, we may refer to certain metrics such as gross margin, average revenue per user, cost per acquisition, and lifetime value, which are non-IFRS measures and do not have any standardized meaning under IFRS and are therefore unlikely to be comparable to similar measures presented by other issuers. Freckles believes that these measures may offer useful supplemental information but are subject to inherent uncertainties and limitations and rely on various assumptions by the company and should therefore not be relied upon for the purpose of making an investment decision. For a complete discussion of the risks, uncertainties, and assumptions which may lead to actual financial results or performances being different from what's contained in our forward-looking information, please refer to our most recently filed statements for the full year period ended December 31st, 2019, along with the management discussion analysis for the same period. At this point, I'd like to hand the call over to Neil, who will take you through the fourth quarter and our outlook for the company.
Okay. Thanks, Andrew. Hi, everybody. So I wanted to frame up this call to manage everyone's expectations and time. I will not be spending too much time discussing financials here. A retrospective on financials from 5 months ago based on the size of our business is, in my opinion, not the best use of everyone's time, especially considering we have included all of these in our filing as well as in the press release that I wrote and was released this morning. I'm confident you will find all of the financial information that you need in those two documents. Instead, in order to be more productive as well as break the cycle of conference calls being dry and monotonous, I'm going to spend the time on this call discussing the operational highlights of the past quarter, a business outlook moving forward, as well as spend some time at the end of the call discussing Google's recent announcement to eliminate the use of third-party tracking in the Chrome browser, a massive event for the overall industry, and how this impacts our company positively. So let's begin with some of the fundamentals, starting with a clear understanding of our two core products, Freckle and Killy. Freckle is our measurement product. Simplistically, Freckle provides an audit of a brand's media spend and its ability to drive consumers to a physical location. Available internationally, Freckle provides measurement services for all media channels, including desktop, mobile, social, search, TV, outdoor, and radio. We do not sell any media at Freckle and are hired as an independent auditor that works on behalf of these brands to determine the effectiveness of their media spend. Over the past 2 years, Freckle has expanded this product suite to also include targeting data, data that is based on customer visitation. Targeting data is used by brands to determine whether they would like to send an advertisement to you based on your store visitation history as well as your intent. In short, a brand such as Starbucks wants to target people seen in coffee shops, not car dealerships. We provide that data to these brands and are paid based on its usage. The second product inside of the organization is Killy, a consumer-facing privacy product that allows consumers to onboard data from a variety of sources, put it under their control encrypted, and should they sell it, be paid directly for its usage in cash. Created with the belief that the use of consumer data will require consumer consent and involvement in the future, we identified that there were no tools in the market to allow for this to happen. Consumers have little to no awareness of how much data is being collected from them, nor do they understand the value of this data. The current value of consumer data when amalgamated from all of the sources that are collecting it, unbeknownst to the consumer, is approximately $500 per month or $6,000 per year, with a growth rate of 30% per annum. It's also important to note that these are the rates without the consumer at the negotiating table. It begs the question, what would the value be if you had a say on the value of your data, and what would be the impact on the data market if prices were to increase dramatically due to the consumer being involved? We predict that a coup is coming and that it will manifest inside of the social networks that are popular today and ricochet across the entire data ecosystem. Should the 2.5 billion people inside of the Facebook platform learn that Facebook is making $40 per month from their data and has been for years, we expect a revolt that will make Cambridge Analytica look like kindergarten. Everyone on this call is a consumer first. You are aware that data is being collected on you, but you have little idea on how this is being used. Do you believe that you should have a say in who collects your data, how much they collect, for how long, and who they sell it to you? Do you think, as a consumer, that you should be able to unsubscribe easily and or be compensated should it generate revenue? Not to pick on Facebook, but they did $100 billion in top-line sales last year with $40 billion in EBITDA based on selling you. Hopefully, this narrative is starting to resonate, as this is the foundation of our strategy with Kili, consumer control of data. We do not believe that the status quo in data collection is tenable, and we continue to position ourselves in the Kili product as the only public company focused on next-generation consumer privacy. Pushing our thesis along are increasing changes to global privacy, such as GDPR, which is the General Data Protection Regulation, which came into effect in the EU in 2018 and requires explicit consent from consumers to use their data, as well as CCPA, which is the California Consumer Privacy Act, now live in the U.S. as of January 1st, that shares many of the same concepts of GDPR. Privacy is a trend that is not going away, and we believe that Kili, as it expands both in functionality and global reach, can be the default privacy product for consumers and their data. As discussed in the last conference call, we want Kili to be the brand for privacy in the same way that Uber is the brand for ride sharing. So, we are one company with two brands inside of it, Freckle and Kili. It's acknowledged that we have created some confusion around our brand and our stock by having these two products inside of it. Eliminating this confusion so that everyone understands fully what is inside of the organization and what the key drivers are is a priority for me in the coming quarters. While both of these products continue to grow and gain traction internationally, increasingly, more and more of our focus is on the Kili product, as its potential is larger, really, than any product that I've ever built in my career. I have zero interest in building a $10 million or $50 million company. I've done that already. The reason we are building what we are is because we believe we can be the biggest company in the world. That's the opportunity, and while there's no guarantee it will be us, if you believe that privacy and consumer control of data is a macro trend, we are the public company to allow you to participate in this theme. Okay. So let's spend some time going over the Q4 numbers. I cringe a little bit when doing this, as looking backwards 5 months to what we were working on and building is dog years to a company of this size, but I do appreciate everyone will want to know how we are gaining traction on our plan. So to begin, I want to say that I'm happy with the revenue results this quarter, as Freckle delivered 17% revenue growth in Q4 over the same period last year, as well as 17% quarterly growth over Q3 2019. Compared to what we delivered in the quarter previously, this is up, and the strategic changes we made in early 2019 are beginning to show in our P&L. These changes, which included a focus on the U.S. market, media verticals that were less competitive and not commoditized, as well as clients who were more reoccurring and less transactional in their billings, allowed us to not only grow top line, but also double our reoccurring revenue from 30% to 64% in 2019. This traction continues currently in Q1 with numbers that are tracking well, further validating the changes we made in 2019. While Q4 was good, Q1 is very strong and is considerably over Q1 from 2019. While it's natural to focus on top-line revenue, I'm more happy that we were able to continue to grow the top line in Q4 while building Kili in the background and introducing more data to the Freckle product suite, a vertical that now contributes over 38% of revenue. Search and social measurement and data, supported by our integrations into Facebook and Google, continue to be a big part of our revenue, contributing 22% and 18% of the total billing, respectively. These are two good examples of verticals that are more reoccurring in nature and operationally lighter for us to support. They also highlight a growing trend to provide data and measurement to global platforms as a service versus presenting data and measured in an own dashboard, a legacy way of showcasing these solutions, in our opinion. Gross margin was 58% during the quarter compared to 67% in Q4 of 2018, primarily due to some non-reoccurring costs incurred to update and expand the number of locations we monitor our systems for our Freckle products. Our operating costs increased to $2.4 million compared to $1.6 million in the year-ago quarter, but decreased $219,000 from the previous quarter. Operating costs rose year over year due mainly to increased software developers and cloud infrastructure, but we continue to look to pull any and all non-essential costs out of the business. For 2019 full-year results, you can refer to the statements for more detail, but the trends we saw in Q4 are similar. The growth in top-line revenue was derived primarily from a 755% year-over-year increase in data and segment sales, as well as revenue from the U.S. growing to 87% versus 69%. Gross margin was steady at 66% in 2019 versus 68% in 2018. We exited 2019 with $2.4 million in cash and no corporate debt. So the natural question here is about additional capital for 2020. While we are not naive to this and we have enough capital until the middle of the year, we do have a larger capital plan that we will outline in the future when able. Important to note is that I do own 2/3 of the equity in this company, with the vast majority of the remainder owned by employees and insiders, so we have access to capital. Now, as we are relatively new to the market, with this being our second public call, I also wanted to establish another item that I'll take you through each quarter, a scorecard on how we did based on what I said we were going to do on the last earnings call. Acknowledging that this is a dynamic business that is constantly changing, I'll try and provide you with as much visibility on developments as I can by outlining what I think we can reasonably deliver in the upcoming quarter. So with that in mind, let's start with the review of the seven things we identified from last quarter that we wanted to accomplish. First was to expand the Kili application outside of the North American market. We accomplished this. We expanded the Kili application to the Asia-Pacific region and are currently available now in 5 markets: the United States, Canada, Singapore, Australia, and New Zealand, a total addressable market of approximately 400 million individuals. Secondly, we wanted to introduce an additional third-party research engine into the Kili application, increasing average revenue per users for Kili, otherwise known as ARPU. We did both of these. We added Cint, a global research supply-side platform, to the Kili product. The combination of this new survey provider plus the existing survey provider was the core driver of the ARPU increase of 250% we saw in Q4 versus Q3. Additionally, for 2019, the ARPU increased to a total of 827% for the full year versus 2018. So we are making great progress here, and this continues in Q1. Thirdly, we wanted to add an incentivized video model to the Kili application, also to increase average revenue per users for Kili. Also done, incentivized video was added to the application in Q4 and has proven to be a good module for user retention, but not a huge driver for ARPU. For context, we're seeing about 75% of people on Android devices engaging with video when entering the mobile application. Video has also had the additional benefit of reducing the dependency on surveys inside of the application, a trend that you will see more and more in each quarter moving forward as we add additional modules. Fourth, we wanted to improve the user interface of the Kili application to improve engagement and user retention. This we did not do. We didn't do this, but it is a priority for Q2. Every product decision we make internally is a horse trade, and I made the decision to delay this to instead focus on improving unit economics of the application, which means really focusing on average revenue per user via video edition and operationalizing surveys to perform better. Putting really a better UI on top of integrations that are not operationalized is really not the most efficient use of time and resources, so we made a plan to operationalize those and then turn our attention to UI. So to be clear, I'm not a big fan of the aesthetic of the current application, so rest assured this will get done in Q2 and is already underway. Fifth, we wanted to secure and announce an additional data distribution deal to expand the global presence of Freckle. This we also didn't do, and while there are partnerships internationally that we are discussing for Freckle, I would be remiss if I said that this was a priority for us in 2020. I'm confident we will have some of these deals executed, but we won't be chasing these at the expense of other initiatives which we feel are higher priorities. I'll discuss those priorities in the list of items that we will be tracking for Q1. Six, we wanted to secure and announce another significant partnership in Q4. We did this. In Q4, we announced a partnership with iCrossing, a U.S.-based advertising agency owned by Hearst Communications. This has proven to be a very profitable relationship for us, and we're looking to continue to expand on this in Q1 and throughout 2020. Seven, we wanted to demonstrate quarter-over-quarter revenue growth in Q4 at similar rates realized in Q3, while sustaining the current recurring revenue model. Also done. As previously discussed, we had larger quarter-over-quarter growth in Q4 versus Q3, as well as year-over-year. This trend is continuing in Q1. Recurring revenue is stable, and we don't really anticipate any material changes here. So, in summary, five out of the seven were accomplished, with one additional in progress and the other being a goal that is being deprioritized. So, for these goals, we're really aiming for 100% delivery. So, with that in mind, I want to outline the Q1 goals that we're looking at so that you can track them on a go-forward basis. For Q1, I've identified 10 initiatives that I'm very confident that we can achieve and will be accretive to the business. They are as follows. First, expand the Kili application outside of the mobile ecosystem to make it available online. This initiative is really important for a couple of reasons. First, it removes our dependence on Apple and Google for distribution when you're an application, a dependency that I'm not incredibly comfortable with moving forward. And second, it removes the categorization of Kili being classified as an app. While this may seem like semantics, it's never really been the intention of the product to only be an app. The move to web elevates the brand and the product beyond the application ecosystem to now the application representing just one part of our solution. Moving forward, you can expect additional modules to support this philosophy where Kili will have a presence in any and all areas, platforms, or verticals where consumer data is leaking or being collected. Secondly, we want to expand the Kili product to an additional 1 to 3 countries, extending on what we did in the previous quarter. Ultimately, we aspire to be the global leader in privacy, period. If we are to be the global leader in privacy, we need to be global. This means we need to be everywhere. Expanding to additional countries, while not trivial, is not incredibly difficult. Expanding while being privacy compliant in all these markets is incredibly hard. I'm not convinced that others who've expanded into the international market have taken privacy into consideration. We are, as compliance with privacy is paramount to our brand and positioning in the long term, so we're taking a careful approach to this. Third, passive revenue versus active revenue. This is a really important milestone for us, and you'll hear more about this in the coming days. The introduction of a dividend income module for consumers allows individuals to be compensated for their data passively versus having to engage actively in surveys and videos exclusively. A more basic way to think of this is we are introducing a module to allow consumers to make money in their sleep. Passive revenue scales, active revenue doesn't. Before you ask, why bother with active revenue then? Because there is a symbiotic relationship between the two. Passive revenue alerts you to new revenue being added to your account, leading users to open and engage with the product, thereby creating a lead gen opportunity for them to participate in active revenue, such as surveys and video, and around you go. Fourth, we want to introduce a comprehensive user referral program to customers to allow them to share the product and be compensated while reducing internal CPA. While this may seem basic, referrals are essential to our acquisition strategy. Referrals create more loyalty and retention amongst users while reducing the cost of acquisition considerably. For context, a $1 referral program where a user receives 50 cents for a referring user with the new user receiving 50 cents cuts paid acquisition in half, helping our core unit economics. Fifth, we want to increase the ARPU, average revenue per user, of Kili customers at a double-digit rate, further reducing the disparity between CPA and LTV. You'll hear me talk incessantly about the triangle, but this speaks to this as well. This one is self-explanatory in the sense that this is the metric that we are looking at every day and the metric that every single person in the organization is aware of. Six, increase survey conversion rates for users inside of Kili for surveys, leading to improved retention and average revenue per user. There will come a time when our survey conversion rates will flatten. Until that happens, there is additional revenue or ARPU to be applied to our model. Improving conversions is the equivalent of squeezing every penny we can out of every module to help our unit economics, or as we incessantly say internally, to squeeze the triangle. Seven is to announce an additional six-figure upfront agency deal for Freckle. On the Freckle side, our business continues to track well. Similar to our partnership with iCrossing, our goal is to announce a similar partnership that will be accretive to our 2020 P&L. We also want to announce a large data partnership with a financial institution for retail traffic monitoring for Freckle. Hedge funds and financial firms are huge buyers of research and analytics that they use to monitor publicly traded ticker symbols in various markets around the world. Our data set has the ability to provide insights on visitation trends for publicly traded retailers, auto dealers, manufacturers, and others. We are hoping to announce one partnership in this space in the coming quarter. Additionally, we would like to see quarter-over-quarter revenue growth similar to the levels of late 2019 for the Freckle product. This, too, is self-explanatory. We're off to a great start in 2020, so I'm very confident in this goal. Lastly, we want to improve the Freckle data product by expanding the distribution and breadth and revenue of this data taxonomy. We saw a great increase in data sales in 2019, as highlighted earlier. In Q4, we spent quite a bit of time reevaluating our approach to this product and have made some significant changes to our strategy and distribution that we believe will be accretive to the coming quarters and result in better top-line revenue. So we've been building Killy now for over a year, really, with the goal of providing a place for consumers to store and monetize their data. It's important for investors to understand that we have been building the platform in a very methodical fashion. What I mean by this is we have been experimenting and fine-tuning the product with the feature set to make sure we as a small company can scale the platform efficiently. I'm pleased to say that we continue to see ARPU and retention rise and the cost of acquisition fall. Our goal is to continue to add modules that will drive up ARPU, reduce churn, and increase lifetime value so that LTV inflects above the cost of acquisition. At this point, we can aggressively deploy money into acquiring users knowing that we have a cash flow positive model. Internally, we call this the triangle, and every day we are working on driving these metrics, which when achieved can create a flywheel effect on the economics of the company and allow Killy to scale extremely quickly. To close, I wanted to finish by talking about the market opportunity and the trends we continue to see that are creating the tailwind for our business. On the last conference call, I highlighted that we believe that we are on the verge of a transformational shift in how data in all industries is collected, stored, sold, and managed. We believe we are moving to a world where the consumer is in more control of their data and has greater transparency on how their data is used. We think we are in a never-ending cycle of data hacks that are driven by an antiquated way of storing data that is compounded by the fact that the data that is stored is increasingly private and valuable. We do believe that we are at the peak of big tech and that the data policies of these firms will ultimately undermine them and create a coup by the same customers who have been powering them since inception. It will be the consumers inside of the platforms that gain increasing visibility on what data of theirs is collected, how it is stored, and how much money is being made off it that will drive this. This shift, aided by a tsunami of government regulation, will lead to the biggest disruption in media and marketing in the last 15 years, creating in turn an enormous opportunities for firms building in the space. Additionally, since our last quarterly call, there's been one additional variable added to the mix that is arguably bigger than all of the above combined and is also beneficial to Killy. This is Google's recent announcement that they will be eliminating third-party cookies in 2022. What is a third-party cookie, and what does its deprecation mean for the industry as a whole, as well as for our business? Let me give you a quick description. A third-party cookie is a small piece of code that is used on a website to track what you as a consumer are doing. A cookie leaves breadcrumbs regarding everything you do online for others, namely brands and publishers, to gather and use to track and advertise to you. If you wondered why you see a barbecue advertisement for 3 weeks after browsing barbecues on Home Depot's website, now you know. It's because of the cookie. Google's decision to eliminate the third-party cookie is a challenge to the entire online ecosystem, primarily due to their dominant share of the browser market, a market where Google's Chrome browser has 70% global market share. Eliminating third-party cookies from 70% of the market, which is, to be clear, the elimination of third-party tracking for 70% of the market, is the equivalent to turning off the oxygen for the media and advertising industry. No cookie, no tracking. No tracking, no targeting. No targeting, no targeting, no business. Every media firm and data company uses cookies as the identifier or oxygen in their solution. Losing access to this tracker means total collapse. The number of firms, many of which are public, that have a dependency upon this cookie are in the tens of thousands. The impact that this loss of the third-party cookie will have on the media and data ecosystems is 100 times greater than that of privacy. Unfortunately, for all media and data firms, not only do they have to deal with privacy and consumer consent now when working with data, but they also have to have a plan for the loss of the number one supplier of data, Chrome. Why is this important, Achille? With the deprecation of the third-party cookie, the industry is scrambling for a net new identifier for the internet. The variable that is being discussed as the new identifier is the email. At this point, you're probably starting to understand why Google decided to eliminate the third-party cookie. Maybe it wasn't necessarily because of privacy, as they led on, but rather to make companies more dependent upon emails, a vertical that they dominate along with Facebook, Apple, Yahoo, and Microsoft. Without an organic way to gather an email, those that are dependent upon tracking and targeting will be forced to allocate more media spend to the platforms that have this identifier. This is a fortunate turn of events for Killy, which has already solved the first issue around privacy and consent to data for clients, but also now can provide an agnostic identifier outside of the walled gardens due to the data variables that Killy users put under their control during signup, namely email, mobile ID, phone number, amongst others. The combination of a fully compliant data set combined with a next generation digital identifier via the Killy ID amplifies the Killy solution to potentially be the foundation of the next generation of the internet. This, to me, is very exciting, and I encourage all of you to continue to track these two macro trends of privacy and cookie deprecation over the coming quarters. So at this point, I'm happy to take any questions that you may have regarding our releases. So, operator, I'll let you facilitate that.
At this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and one keys on your telephone keypad. Keep in mind, you may remove yourself from the question queue at any time by pressing the pound key. Again, it is star and one to ask a question on today's call. And we'll take our first question from Nikhil Dendi with the Mackey Research Capital. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Great. Thanks, guys. Neil, I wanted to go back to some of the comments you had in your statement about having access to capital. Sort of given where the balance sheet is right now and the cash burn, and also given the sort of high insider ownership, how should we think about that over the medium term?
I mean, as I stated in the script, is that we have a plan in place. We don't have all the details on that yet, so we're not naive to the fact that at some point or another we'll have to put more cash into the business, and as more details become available to us, we'll obviously let the market know.
Got it. Okay. The part about sort of Google getting rid of third-party cookies and also your comments about the unique identifier using email addresses and mobile ID and whatnot, what's a good sort of timeline that we should think about which might sort of see benefit to your revenue from all these factors coming together? Is it a second half 2020 type thing or early 2021 type event that we should be thinking about?
I would say that the cookie is later for sure. I don't think that you're going to see that really impact our business at the front end of this year. What's going to drive the business in the short term will be the fixation around consented data. So every brand, advertiser, and platform is running around frantically trying to find data that they can put into their ecosystem that's consented. And this is getting exacerbated by a bunch of things that are actually happening in the market. So, you know, you're familiar, obviously, with Apple's release of iOS 11, of iOS 13, which, you know, cut a ton of data out of the market. So I think what you're going to find is the focus will initially be on us providing consented data to these individual platforms. Because we'll have those existing relationships and those existing contracts, it's natural for us to then double down with those same individuals and then provide them with help specifically around the net new identifier. But we do have this, you know, I think for us internally, we do have this identifier. It's obviously relatively new, but every publisher really in the world right now is looking for sort of a solution to the market. So we think it's unique because ultimately at the end of the day, if you need to have an identifier on your page, like why wouldn't you want to have that with a solution that is actually controlled by the individual consumer?
Mm-hmm. Got it. Okay. Aside from the last, you know, couple of weeks in the stock market, of course, like if you look at Facebook and Google, there doesn't seem to have been much of an impact from GDPR and CCPA. And just from your vantage point, just curious as to your thoughts around that. And is it because there seems to be this school of thought that suggests the bigger firms, they can sort of, you know, abide by these new frameworks perhaps a bit more easily than smaller companies. What's your thinking on that, and how does that benefit Freckle and Keeley?
Yeah, you're right. So those companies absolutely are going to benefit from the privacy. And so there's a couple of things. Because you're a walled garden, you own all the terms and conditions of your walled garden. So there is, like, in order for you to get access to that walled garden, you have to conform. And if you don't conform, you can't get in. So it's an all or nothing proposition by Facebook, Google, and others. I think what you've started to see in the market, and this really is where kind of the Chrome conversation comes up, is that a lot of these firms are really using privacy as a way to dig a bigger trench actually around their business. So I'm not necessarily convinced that Google is deciding to actually eliminate third-party tracking from the browser because of privacy. I think they're actually trying to actually make people use more and more of their individual products. So you're right, kind of longer term, I think if you're looking across the entire ecosystem, there's literally thousands of firms that are not those walled gardens. So if you're a data management platform or a DSP or an advertising agency that doesn't have those, doesn't own those terms and conditions, you're more exposed than the walled gardens. But I think it's fair to say that they will be impacted as well. It's just going to take them a little bit longer. The last comment on that is, you know, I think my feeling around the walled gardens is less to do with their ability to kind of manage specifically around privacy and consent. I think my challenge against the walled gardens is how much data they're actually collecting unbeknownst to the individual consumer. So as you likely know, you as a consumer can go into Facebook, you can download your entire 10 years worth of history out of Facebook. Most consumers don't know that. That's the data that is actually driving, you know, $100 billion in top line sales. So that's where I think that they're going to have the bigger problem, is less around managing consent, but managing the expectations specifically around consumers as to why they should generate $100 billion in top line or $40 billion in bottom line and the consumer should get zip. So I think they're going to have a tough time selling that to their user base.
Mm-hmm. And as we get to that point and the company itself gets to that cash flow neutral position that you've kind of highlighted in the past because of the confluence of that triangle, how should we think about generating additional value from your existing user base at that point in time? Does it sort of hinge on extracting more value with the existing modules or launch new modules? What's the thinking on the product roadmap and the monetization as that triangle comes into view?
Yeah, I think we're kind of getting to the end of that active revenue stream, which I made reference to. So active revenue is surveys and video, and if you think through that, it puts a lot of pressure on the product when you have a product that is dependent upon active revenue. So you have to come to the product, you have to engage with the product, and the more you engage with the product, the more kind of revenue you create. We believe that the passive model is actually sort of kind of more appealing to the users. We think that that actually scales. So the introduction of all the of passive modules to individuals is where we see there to be probably the most runway. So there's always going to be some additional extraction out of existing modules, but I think on a go-forward basis, especially as we get into increasingly more quarters, you're going to see the addition of net new modules that will be kind of passive in nature. Those will create new revenue. And I think the other thing to keep in mind is that any net new consumer can jump on any of these new modules, as well as any old consumer, any old customer as well. So there's a lot of torque in that model, that's for sure.
Got it. And I guess that ties in the vision of being more than just an app on iOS and Android as well, right?
Yeah, that drives me crazy, to be honest. So like when people tell me, when they talk about the app, you know, it automatically brings up kind of the wrong questions, which is, you know, how many downloads do you have, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I think that's not what we're trying to do, is that ultimately where what we believe is that there is no company operating really anywhere in the world that is the default player for consumer privacy. We want to be that person. We want to be that company. That means that we have to be really any and everywhere where data is leaking. So social networks are one, browsers are others, applications are others. I mean, these are all places where data is leaking. Keeley needs a presence there. So, you know, I think it's a foundational shift for us to get off of the application. I think it's sort of similar to what's kind of getting out of North America as well, where We didn't want to be perceived as an application. We also didn't want to be perceived as a U.S.-based company. You know, I thought for us, like, we wanted to be basically be global. We wanted to be everywhere. That's really has been kind of, that's been our model.
Got it. And just one last one before I pass the line here. As you look towards your expansion geographically, what are some milestones along that path, and what kind of traction have you seen outside North America to date? Thanks.
Yeah, the traction's been good. I think we're actually seeing, it's pretty early days. We're seeing some of our kind of our lowest cost acquisition actually coming from some of those individual markets that we've actually expanded to. So that applies back to the triangle that I always talk about. So the triangle for me is always kind of like, you know, what can drive down acquisition costs, which is what can actually drive up lifetime value of the user. So, you know, for us, expanding internationally has been good because it gives us a larger footprint from which to allocate our dollars. Quite candidly, I don't care if I get a net new user in the United States versus Canada versus Singapore. I want the user that is going to be in the application the longest, and I want the user that is going to be the most efficient for us to acquire. So intuitively, the bigger the actual footprint that you expand to, the more opportunity you have to do that. So from a line of sight perspective, you know, I don't think we're going to kind of wake up at the back end of the year and launch 25 countries. I think that that would be romantic. It's just not reasonable. I think what you'll see is you'll see a steady kind of pace for us adding markets kind of every quarter. And that will give us a base from which we can continue to expand that total addressable market. So in Q1, kind of Q2, you'll increasingly see a little bit more of that. Q3, Q4, and so when we come in and out of 2020, what we started with and what we ended with, you're going to have more countries with a much larger addressable audience.
Great, thanks.
And once again, if you'd like to ask a question today, please press the star and one keys on your telephone keypad. We'll take our next question from Deepak Kaushal with Stifel GMP. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hey, thanks. Good evening, Neil. Sorry, I came on the call a little bit late, so I might ask some redundant questions. So I apologize in advance for that. Just wanted to ask you the split, if you gave the split between Killy versus Freckle in terms of revenue and perhaps in your outlook, like how you expect revenue to be split between these over the next year.
I mean, the majority of revenue, we don't break that out. The majority of revenue inside of the business is primarily coming from Freckle. And I think that that does kind of go back to sort of our model, which is really what we're trying to do is focus on kind of those unit economics specifically around Killy, so that when we actually do increase the amount of scale and expansion of that product, the compounding of that revenue line is actually very quick. You know, we think that, you know, Killy is going to be incremental to what we're doing on the revenue side, but it's definitely not the lion's share of the business.
Okay. And so, I mean, you know, I think you mentioned earlier about not wanting to build a $10 to $50 million business. I mean, does Freckle need to live under the same hood as Killy, or do these eventually go in different directions?
You know, I think that's open to debate. I mean, I think that, you know, I've kind of told myself that I wouldn't do this, and then I end up kind of building basically two companies in the same company. I've done that before. You know, I think what's happening now is that, you know, last year Killy was a pretty nascent product. It was small. And we were kind of iterating and experimenting. What's happening though is Killy's becoming a much larger product. It's got a big team. It's got an absolutely huge opportunity. The timing of that product is very strong. So, you know, if the market presented itself, we would obviously look at that. But there are some synergies between the two individual products, but we haven't really kind of made that decision as of yet. But could they live and breathe sort of separately? The answer is for sure. Yeah, they could.
Okay. Last question on the Freckle side. I think in your remarks you said, or in your outlook, you have a potential for an agency deal, and then you guys had some interest from a larger media group. Are those things one and the same, and is there something that changed in that market that's causing a bit more traction on the Freckle side? And then I'll jump to Killy.
Yeah, no, they're not the same. They're different, so they're two different goals. One is it, so the iCrossing announcement that I made reference to, that was in Q4, that's a traditional agency, and so those are agencies that rather than kind of working with us on a client-by-client basis, are kind of coming to us and saying, hey, what we want to do is we kind of want to hire you to work on all of our clients over a period of time. So what's great about that is it gives us better visibility on kind of revenue and traction. So that's what I referred to as it relates to kind of an agency deal. From a partnership or a data partnership perspective, that is pretty unique in the sense that where we think that there is an opportunity is we've had a lot of conversations with some of the larger financial firms who've asked us specifically around data, specifically around visitation. And I think it's intuitive. If you look at any of the public markets, there's tons of these individual ticker symbols have physical locations. Hedge funds, financial firms, et cetera, are really looking for an input to help them with their individual modules. So if they're trying to determine if same-store sales are going up or going down, they'd like to, you know, add that data into their model. So that's been sort of a little bit more opportunistic for us, but I think it's a byproduct of us having been quite good at measurement that we've been approached by a number of these firms. So we're trying to put one of them into our model, and we think that that's going to be accretive. So I don't necessarily think that that there's more traction than there has been in the past. I think some of the things that we did in 2019 in the early part of the year where we focus more on the U.S. market, larger clients, more reoccurring. I think that what you're starting to see, which is manifesting in the Q4 financial, is really a lot of the work that we did earlier in the year is starting to show there, and you'll see that that's kind of continuing on in Q1.
Got it. Thank you. And then on the Kili side, maybe it wasn't clear to me. I understood that you want to move away from being an app, but what does the web, for as an example, get you that mobile doesn't?
Well, so for one, it gets me away from Google and Android. So that's not an immaterial one. So no offense to Tim Cook, but like ultimately being beholden to Apple for running your product is not necessarily something I feel like super comfortable with. So for us, it's like, you know, ultimately, if you want to be expanding into these individual markets, you've got a separate kind of code base for Android and a separate code base for Apple. You're having to, you know, release into those individual stores. So each of those individual stores has a set of conditions and requirements. What you can do in one store is not what you can do in another store. So, I mean, there's literally millions of applications that have to deal with that, but it's not necessarily kind of conducive to scale. When you think about web, you're now not actually expanding specifically on actually releasing into the Apple Store or the Google Play Store, you're actually releasing based on IP address. And so as long as your solution is compliant with privacy, your ability to roll throughout all Spanish-speaking countries is a lot easier. Trying to do that in an application environment, sure, you can localize the application, but then you have to submit to each of those individual stores. So, you know, I think it's a kind of a combination really for me as to really try and actually reduce dependency and risk, which I think every CEO should be doing. And then secondly, looking for ways in which we can actually scale faster and more efficiently, which we can do with the web. The other thing I'll say on that, Deepak, is that some of the things that you can do on web from a consumer perspective regarding uploading files, et cetera, is not that easy to do inside of an application market. So it does give us more opportunity for us to actually expand the product.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. And then just lastly on this, the Google change with respect to third-party tracking and cookies, it sounds like it's an important change in the industry, but doesn't sound like it's going to impact the business near term. When you think about strategy or tactics going forward, to take full advantage of that, do you need to change your strategy, or are you guys in line with that already with what you're doing today?
I think we've been fortunate with this is that it's not really changing our strategy because, you know, ultimately our thesis is that good things happen when consumers have data underneath their control. Ultimately, that identifier that I made reference to is really an identifier that is owned by somebody else. The identifier that is owned by someone else is an amalgamation of your identity. So that runs exactly contrary to what we believe. We believe that the identity or the identifier should reside with the consumer. If the identity resided with the consumer, there'd be no need for any cookies really anywhere because you'd be basically confirming and qualifying with the individual user. Our philosophy of actually bringing you to the Kili ecosystem is that you as a consumer basically have this data. It's underneath your control. It's there as a persistent identifier, and it's owned by you. You can move it around. So where we think, you know, where there's future possibility for that is that if you have all of these kind of core identifiers that I made reference to, a mobile ID, phone number, IP address, email address, all of these various things, you know, you have anywhere from kind of 3 to 5 deterministic variables all housed under one consented framework owned by the consumer. Like, you're good luck finding that anywhere else. Like, you're not. And then ultimately, not only is it owned by you, it creates a ton of opportunity. So as an example, if you have that underneath your control, there's no reason that you can't do SSO or single sign-in to a third-party platform. So you've seen this before where you'd use Facebook Connect or Google Connect or sign in with Apple. There's no reason that in the future you can't be signing in with your Kili ID. And if you're doing that, you're doing so based on data that is consented and controlled by you. And that's obviously that would make a fundamental change to sort of what's been going on in the market. So I don't think there's any changes, because ultimately it's just really kind of mapping to what we really believe in. I think it just kind of draws more eyes towards us as to, look, this is a company that is focused on actually building consented data. We think we're really one of the only companies in the world that's doing that. Oh, and we also happen to have a next generation digital identifier. So while biased, I really think that we're sitting at the intersection of literally the two biggest macro trends in the market, and we're available as a stock to be purchased and participated in. So that's our theory.
Okay, got it. That's helpful. Thanks again. I'll pass the line.
And there are no more questions at this time. Mr. Sweeney, I'll pass the call back over to you.
Okay. Thanks, everybody. Really appreciate everyone joining us for our call. I'd encourage everybody to stay on top of those two macro trends that I made reference to. Also follow us on social to kind of stay on top of all the various different announcements that we have. And, of course, hopefully everybody's downloaded the Kili product and can provide us with some feedback. So see you next quarter.
This concludes the Freckles fourth quarter and year end of fiscal 2019 financial results conference call. A replay of this call will be available on Freckles' website at freckleiot.com. Thank you.